Yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
Charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see Whoa!
man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4. I got something, girl, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to
sing on.
Lift every voice and sing, till I didn't ever sing. Ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoices rise high. Burning the time, loud as the Georgia.
Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221. Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello. Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
347-838-9825. We're going to try to take a look at the debates, everybody. What y'all thought about them? What was y'all response? What I've done was put together a montage of snippets which I felt might have been important for you to check out and deal with. I'm going to play some of that with you. The pundits are already stating that Obama won, and it was a very good debate, you know. There were some good key points on there. I'm going to save them up like when my man Mike spoke, but I'm going to save them up. If you listened to the show earlier, we, well, the last debate, we kind of came out and said the debate is similar to a boxing match. Romney came out swinging full blast, and he had to do what he did, and he had to do what he did. And he did what he do. The same trick does not work twice. It never works twice. The aggressiveness, the way he engaged Obama, all of that. What I'm going to try to do now is see if I can get some footage of that now. Hold on, see.
Concerning let me get, why don't you
rewind it to the first section. I think it's about 13 minutes, and then let's see if we can take some calls on this also. 347-838-9825, Jimmy's Underground Radio.
We're going to move you both along to taxes over here and all these folks that have been waiting. Governor, this question is for you. It comes from Mary Polano.
Hi, Mary. Governor Romney, you have stated that if you're elected president, you would plan to reduce the tax rates for all the tax brackets and that you would work with the Congress to eliminate some deductions in order to make up for the loss in revenue. Concerning these various deductions, the mortgage deduction, the charitable deduction, the child tax credit, and also the, what's that other credit?
You're doing great.
Oh, I remember. The education credits, which are important to me because I have children in college. What would be your position on those things, which are important to the middle class?
Thank you very much. And let me tell you, you're absolutely right about part of that, which is I want to bring the rates down. I want to simplify the tax code, and I want to get middle-income taxpayers to have lower taxes. And the reason I want middle-income taxpayers to have lower taxes is because middle-income taxpayers have been buried over the past 4 years. You've seen, as middle-income people in this country, incomes go down $4,300 a family, even as gasoline prices.
Well, that's a little piece of Romney. I also had to download the stuff. And he's addressing the taxes. The tax burden issue. We got a shockwave flood done crossed through everything in line. So we got a little shockwave problem going through our little system. We try to clear it up for everybody so I can get everything back running. So I'm trying to get to the part where, where Romney and Obama separate themselves on tax policies. And if I get to run this one little clip, I would say go to commercial, but I want to go to commercial right now. I want to play it out. I apologize for the delay. So let me go to another one. Let me go to another section then. I'm having a hard time with that upload. I'm getting a non-responsive sign, so let me try this one right here. Okay, I'm sorry everybody. I'm having a hard time with my system here. The shockwave, Ebony. The Apple went out the other day, so we borrowed a little computer, and it's difficult to go anything. Give me Braille for the people, and we come right back. 347-838-9825. I'm trying to work on these little kinks, and be back with you 1 second.
A little something for the people, bruh. think y'all should.
And talk about the victim last night that got popped, and who the best on the block with the crack rock. Play a lot of pocket banging till the track stop. It's in our nature to run into this jackpot. Hoping not to scrape the blow for that rah-rah, but you envision that trip that's living my ties. The anticipation turns to aggravation. So when words of wisdom spoke, you hear blah-blah. Cause if that wise guy turns to a wise guy, I pray to God that that guy ain't on a high rise. And if he is, I hope the earth he got nine lives. See, this is the type of life I seen with my eyes. Ghost boys whipping in the ghost fire on the 9 to 5, but no bow ties. Cause when Jay's on the street, you're solo, no lie. All black attire, shooting with a bow tie.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war.
And watch a nigga kill another nigga. So one dead, one in jail, so soon there'll be no niggas. They scamming for the dough, nigga. I can't trust them, I don't know them. Them yo niggas, I need the source, they either leave or buy. Cause these niggas don't care if I breathe or die. So put your pride aside and let your wings fly. Don't be a middleman, be the man who supply. The definition of a boss, let it multiply. And if they oppose that, they all can die. Cause if they move fast, that's when them cautions fly. So I'd rather be alive than a homicide. Feel my spirit, see my girl and my mama cry. And all my niggas born liquor for the honor. I vow to be the realest without ever saying it. So serious, I ain't kidding, nigga, who you playing with?
Where our rank on this earth, to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rank of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Fucking the same chick your man had last week. Now he's emotional, so now you got beef. Instead of him checking out who the hoe be, next thing you know, he let go free. To the chest. Now we gotta lay another brother down to rest. That wall getting full, cause y'all full of the bull. No more knuckle up, cause all they do now is cool. 15 years old, not even in school. But he know mathematics better than you. A community that knows everything about you. But when it goes down, they don't know what to do. What type of sense is that? No clue. So instead of waiting for them, you make the first move. Instead of talk about the victim last night that got popped, or who the best on the block with the crack rock.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
Secretary Stephen Chu has now been on record 3 times stating it's not policy of his department to help lower gas prices. Do you agree with Secretary Chu that this is not the job of the Energy Department?
The most important thing we can do is to make sure we control our own energy. So here's what I've done since I've been president. We have increased oil production to the highest levels in 16 years. Natural gas production is the highest it's been in decades. We have seen increases in coal production and coal employment. But what I've also said is we can't just produce traditional sources of energy. We've also got to look to the future. That's why we doubled fuel efficiency standards on cars. That means that in the middle of the next decade, any car you buy, you're going to end up going twice as far on a gallon of gas. That's why we've doubled clean energy production like wind and solar and biofuels. And all these things have contributed to us lowering our oil imports to the lowest levels in 16 years. Now, I want to build on that. And that means, yes, we still continue to open up new areas for...
Now, I'm going to continue to play the show, but I just want you all to notice that he did not answer the question about, do you agree that lowering gas prices is not the job of the Energy Department, or will we see gas prices back to a certain rate? I'm going to let you play it on and judge it. You know, Romney, you know, Romney got some good blows in, like the president did the last debate. But the president didn't come out willy-nilly, but he did come out dancing and dutching and dodging. I'm going to play some more. Tell me what y'all think.
Drilling, we continue to make it a priority for us to go after natural gas. We've got potentially 600,000 jobs and 100 years' worth of energy right beneath our feet with natural gas. And we can do it in an environmentally sound way. But we've also got to continue to figure out how we have efficient energy, because ultimately that's how we're going to reduce demand, and that's what's going to keep gas prices lower. Now, Governor Romney will say he's got an all-of-the-above plan, but basically his plan is to let the oil companies write the energy policies. So he's got the oil and gas part, but he doesn't have the clean energy part. And if we are only thinking about tomorrow or the next day and not thinking about 10 years from now, we're not going to control our own economic future. Because China, Germany, they're making these investments. And I'm not going to cede those jobs of the future to those countries. I expect those new energy sources to be built right here in the United States. That's going to help Jeremy get a job. It's also going to make sure that you're not paying as much for gas.
Governor, on the subject of gas prices.
Well, let's look at the president's policies, all right, as opposed to the rhetoric, because we've had 4 years of policies being played out. And the president's right in terms of the additional oil production, but none of it came on federal land. As a matter of fact, oil production is down 14% this year on federal land, and gas production is down.
You see, this is where I got Romney missed an opportunity to discuss what's hurting America right now. That's high fuel prices. Right now, he's high off the glory wine, feeling that Obama's probably afraid of him, so I'm going to just keep taking jabs and jabs. Now, he goes on later on to talk about the price of fuel and what have you, but right now, he's missing a grand opportunity to show his pain and how he feel about America suffering from these high gas prices. He wants to talk about how the president is not allowing federal drilling on federal land. Now, he must feel that Obama's camp is what some dummies are going to be unprepared or what have you. But I feel that by not tackling the gas prices, he set himself up for what we're about to see is about to happen later on during the engagement.
A 9%. Why? Because the president cut in half the number of licenses and permits for drilling on federal land and in federal waters. So where'd the increase come from? Well, a lot of it came from the Bakken Range in North Dakota. What was his participation there? The administration brought a criminal action against the people drilling up there for oil, this massive new resource we have. And what was the cause? 20 or 25 birds were killed, and they brought out a Migratory Bird Act to go after them on a criminal basis. Look, I want to make sure we use our oil, our coal, our gas, our nuclear, our renewables. I believe...
You see, again, that's why I say Romney missed it. He come off as passé, as not being concerned about wildlife. Again, the question was, do you agree that lowering gas price is not the job of the Energy Department? Yes or no? Yes, gas prices are high, and yes, Americans are suffering. Not saying that President Obama is going to make it a crime to kill some birds or migratory animals as if they are not important. This is where he blew it at, in my opinion.
very much in our renewable capabilities. Ethanol, wind, solar will be an important part of our energy mix. But what we don't need is to have the president keeping us from taking advantage of oil, coal, and gas. This has not been Mr. Oil or Mr. Gas or Mr. Coal. Talk to the people that are working in those industries. I was in coal country. People grab my arms and say, please, save my job. The head of the EPA said, you can't build a coal plant. It's virtually impossible given our regulations. When the president ran for office, he said, if you build a coal plant, you can go ahead, but you'll go bankrupt. That's not the right course for America. Let's take advantage of the energy resources we have, as well as the energy sources for the future. And if we do that, if we do what I'm planning on doing, which is getting us energy independent, for North America energy independence within 8 years, you're going to see manufacturing jobs come back because our energy is low cost. They're already beginning to come back because of our abundant energy. I'll get America and North America energy independent. I'll do it by more drilling, more permits and licenses. We're going to bring that pipeline in from Canada. How in the world the president said no to that pipeline, I will never know. This is about bringing good jobs back for the middle class of America, and that's what I'm going to do.
Mr. President, let me just...
Before I bring the president quote in, that's what I mean. How in the world, oh, my God, Mr. President, it's as if he's in a room with his base. Now, the last debate I said, Romney will have a difficult time engaging in common people that he's not comfortable with, and you can tell by doing this debate. I see I got a caller in. I'm going to get with you in a minute, caller. Let me just play the president's response and show you how by Romney coming off as a bully or... I'm not going to say an elitist or a supreme person, quote-unquote supremacist. I'm not going to come across as that. I'm going to say very aggressive. By being that way, he set himself up. But let me show you how the president came back with it, and then I'm going to take my callers.
See if I can move you to the gist of this question, which is, are we looking at the new normal? I can tell you that tomorrow morning, a lot of people sometimes will wake up and fill up, and they will find that the price of gas is over $4 a gallon. Is it within the purview of the government to bring those prices down, or are we looking at the new normal?
Candy, there's no doubt that world demand's gone up, but our production is going up, and we're using oil more efficiently.
Yes or no? Is $5 a gas the new normal, Mr. President? Yes or no?
And very little of what Governor Romney just said is true. We've opened up public lands. We're actually drilling more on public lands than in the previous administration. And the previous president was an oil man. And natural gas isn't just appearing magically. We're encouraging it and working with the industry. And when I hear Governor Romney say he's a big coal guy, and keep in mind, when you were governor of Massachusetts, you stood in front of a coal plant and pointed at it and said, this plant kills, and took great pride in shutting it down. And now suddenly you're a big champion of coal. So what I've tried to do is be consistent. With respect to something like coal, we made the largest investment in clean coal technology to make sure that even as we're producing more coal, we're producing it cleaner and smarter. Same thing with oil, same thing with natural gas. And the proof is our oil imports are down to the lowest levels in 20 years. Oil production is up, natural gas production is up, and most importantly, we're also starting to build cars that are more efficient. And that's creating jobs. That means those cars can be exported because that's the demand around the world. And it also means that it'll save money in your pocketbook. That's the strategy you need, an all-of-the-above strategy, and that's what we're going to do in the next 4 years.
But that's not what you've done in the last 4 years. That's the problem.
Sure.
In the last 4 years, you cut permits and licenses on federal land and federal waters in half.
Not true, Governor Romney.
So how much did you cut them
not
by?
Not true.
By how much did you cut them by then?
Governor, we have actually produced more oil.
No. How much did you cut licenses and permits on federal land and federal waters?
Governor Romney, here's what we did. There were a whole bunch of oil companies.
No, I had a question, and the question was, how much did you cut them by?
You want me to answer
how
a question?
How much did you cut them by?
I'm happy to answer the question.
All right, and it is?
Here's what happened. You had a whole bunch of oil companies who had leases on public lands that they weren't using. So what we said was, You can't just sit on this for 10, 20, 30 years. Decide when you want to drill, when you want to produce, when it's most profitable for you. These are public lands. So if you want to drill on public lands, you use it or you lose it.
Okay, now.
And so what we did was take away those leases, and we are now reletting them so that we can actually make a profit.
And production on private on
and
government land is down.
No, it
is. Production on government land of oil is down 14%.
Governor,
and production on gas is down 9%.
It's just not true.
It's absolutely true. Look, there's no question but that the people recognize that we have not produced more oil and gas on federal lands and in federal waters. And coal. Coal production is not up. Coal jobs are not up. I was just at a coal facility where some 1,200 people lost their jobs. The right course for America is to have a true all-of-the-above policy. I don't think anyone really believes that you're a person who's going to be pushing for oil and gas and coal. You'll get your chance in a moment. I'm still speaking.
Well,
and the answer is I don't believe people think that's the case because that wasn't a question.
Okay.
That was a statement. I don't think the American people believe that. I will fight for oil, coal, and natural gas. And the proof of whether a strategy is working or not is what the price is that you're paying at the pump. If you're paying less than you paid a year or two ago, why then the strategy is working. But you're paying more. When the president took office, the price of gasoline here in Nassau County was about $1.86 a gallon. Now it's $4 a gallon. Price of electricity is up. If the president's energy policies are working, you're going to see the cost of energy come down. I will fight to create more energy in this country to get America energy secure. And part of that is bringing in a pipeline of oil from Canada, taking advantage of the oil and coal we have here, drilling offshore in Alaska, drilling offshore in Virginia where the people want it. Those things will get us the energy we need.
Mr. President, could you address, because we did finally get the gas prices here, could you address what the governor said, which is if your energy policy was working, the price of gasoline would not be $4 a gallon
here. Think about what the governor just said. He said, when I took office, the price of gasoline was $1.80, $1.86. Why is that? Because the economy was on the verge of collapse. Because we were about to go through the worst recession since the Great Depression. As a consequence of some of the same policies that Governor Romney is now promoting. So it's conceivable that Governor Romney could bring down gas prices because with his policies we might be back in that same mess.
I'll bring you in, Carla. So basically what President Obama is saying, in order for gas prices to be low, we got to have some financial calamity. But I'm letting this play out just to get to the point where how Romney just trying to be a bullyish, trying to prove the president being wrong or as a liar or can't talk without a teleprompter. Let me hit this last remark, how he just set himself up.
What I want to do is to create an economy that is strong and at the same time produce energy. And with respect to this pipeline that Governor Romney keeps on talking about, we've built enough pipeline to wrap around the entire earth once. So I'm all for pipelines. I'm all for oil production. What I'm not for is us ignoring the other half of the equation. So, for example, on wind energy, when Governor Romney says, these are imaginary jobs. When you've got thousands of people right now in Iowa, right now in Colorado, who are working, creating wind power with good-paying manufacturing jobs, and the Republican senator in Iowa is all for it, providing tax credits to help this work, and Governor Romney says, I'm opposed. I'd get rid of it. That's not an energy strategy for the future, and we need to win that future. And
Mr.
I intend
President,
to win it as President of the United States.
I got to move you along. And the
first
question is for you.
He actually got the first question, so I get the last question, last answer on that
actually
one.
Actually, in the follow-up, it doesn't quite.
I'm going to bring some more in, but let me take a little couple of callers and ask them what they thought about the debate so far. Who I got right here online?
This is Brother Toby Miller.
What's going on, Brother Tory Miller? What's happening, my man? What do you think about
man.
The debate? What's your opinion on the presidential debate, last night's debate?
Well, you know, I'm one of those few Republicans that actually supports President Obama.
Okay.
But I'm not very enthusiastic about President Obama, and there's lots of reasons why, but one of the things is I thought that the president actually won the debate, not because he was more precise on the answers, because there was plenty of instances where he failed to answer the question I was asked as well. I just believe that stylistically, style sometimes makes fights. I believe in, as it relates to style, he probably won the event. But I think Governor Romney has actually won strategically in some ways, because he's got President Obama talking about and disputing his plan. The problem that I've seen is that Romney has made his plan the central focus and what he plans to do, and Romney's been able to exploit the failure of the Obama administration on several points over the past few years, and then exploit the gulf that exists between President Obama's plan and people's knowledge of it, because I submit most people don't know what President Obama is proposing on doing because they don't have his, quote, plan in front of them. And I think while President Obama might have won the event, I think Governor Romney is actually winning the war.
Well, it's interesting you said that the event in the war was because a lot of pundits and people were saying, watching the debate, they was cringing and they felt uneasy. Now, I was wondering, were they feeling uneasiness were caused because of the aggressive nature of Romney, because of the lack of respect that he seemed to have showed the President of the United States? He was sitting there talking to him. Now, take it for granted, we are a nation of men, and the president is just one of us. But to sit there and you're a liar, whatever, hey, to be all aggressive toward the person, which was lack of respect. And it reminded me of how Kerry attacked George Bush. Now, everybody thought Kerry was easy, given how the economy was tiltering, we was in two wars we're not paying for, we haven't got Osama bin Laden, we ain't found the weapons of mass destruction. So it's easy for Kerry to just come out there and just badger Bush. And people looked at Bush as being timid, quiet, almost like Obama-ish, so to speak, and not really engaging. And here you have where I felt Kerry's mistake was by disrespecting the seat of the president. Like, man, get on head on. I mean, there's ways of handling your point. What I'm saying is, Romney lost style points this race, this debate, then he garnered the first debate. He garnered style points to me in the first debate to almost give him street cred. The point, I stood up to that guy. He ain't nothing. I took it to him. I had him rattle. Watch. When I get his face, I'm going to do the same thing over and over again, not realizing that maybe the person prepared for you. Maybe the same tricks that you worked this time is not going to work again. Maybe people plan an attack for the second round. Seeing that he felt so confident, secure of his victory from the last debate, that this would be a walk in the park. Now, what I was telling people, why this debate would have been difficult for Romney to handle, because it's in a setting of citizens, Americans, who's going to ask him questions, and they're going to want answers to their questions. It's not going to be like a debate with a moderator and you can run them over like they did the last previous moderator. But he, if you looked at his face and how he was sweating, he didn't come across as being comfortable. And so, in my opinion, it felt like by him not being comfortable, he went on the attack mode. Let me give you an example of being a Republican. You know, everybody wants to shit on my man George Bush, but let me give you something. When the lady came out and asked Romney, what's your difference between George Bush? I felt that he should not have separated himself like he did in that nature, given how George Bush is the last leader of the Republican Party. No matter what, that he's not
in office anything in the last. So to say that I'm different from the last leader that we have means it's saying that everything that led up to the Republican Party at that time is no longer valid. I'm not with that. Now, I don't know if Romney knows that he probably upset a lot of people, a lot of military hawks, a lot of heavy, neither would I am, but a lot of heavy conservatives, a lot of right-wing public, a lot of people got money invested in the George Bush foreign policy, and a lot of people made money in the George Bush housing policy to sit there and even come out and say he's not with big business. Not saying big business is wrong or good, but I'm with small business. The Republican Party was all ill. These are things to me that I felt that Romney was just on something. Now, I want to play another little snippet. This is what I meant by the Republican lady who mentioned Romney being tied with George Bush. And I'm going to try to bring in that clip with his brother Michael came out. And you see, Obama got a weak Achilles heel that no one is exploiting and no one's going to use because none of these Achilles heels want to be exploited or want to be used. I'm going to deal with that in a minute. But let me play this section of the debate. I'm going to come back in 1 second on this.
Governor Romney, I am an undecided voter because I'm disappointed with the lack of progress I've seen in the last 4 years. However, I do attribute much of America's economic and international problems to the failings and missteps of the Bush administration. Since both you and President Bush are Republicans, I fear a return to the policies of those years should you win this election. What is the biggest difference between you and George W. Bush? And how do you differentiate yourself from George W. Bush?
Great. Thank you. And I appreciate that question. I just want to make sure that I think I was supposed to get that last answer, but I want to point out that I don't believe.
I don't think so, Candy.
I don't believe.
I want to make sure our timekeepers are working.
The timekeepers are all working. And let me tell you that the last part, for the two of you to talk to one another, and it isn't quite as ordered as you think. But go ahead and use this 2 minutes any way you'd like to. The question is on the floor.
I just note that I don't believe that bureaucrats in Washington should tell someone whether they can use contraceptives or not. And I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they could have contraceptive care or not. Every woman in America should have access to contraceptives. And the president's statement of my policy is completely and totally wrong.
Governor,
let me come back and answer your question. President Bush and I are different people, and these are different times. And that's why my five-point plan is so different than what he would have done. I mean, for instance, we can now, by virtue of new technology, actually get all the energy we need in North America without having to go to the Arabs or the Venezuelans or anyone else. That wasn't true in his time. That's why my policy starts with a very robust policy to get all that energy in North America and become energy secure. Number two, trade. I'll crack down on China. President Bush didn't. I'm also going to dramatically expand trade in Latin America. It's been growing about 12% per year over a long period of time. I want to add more free trade agreements so we have more trade. Number three, I'm going to get us to a balanced budget. President Bush didn't. President Obama was right. He said that was outrageous to have deficits as high as $500 billion under the Bush years. He was right. But then he put in place deficits twice that size for every one of his 4 years. And his forecast for the next 4 years is more deficits, almost that large. So that's the next area I'm different than President Bush. And then let's take the last one, championing small business. Our party has been focused on big business too long. I came through small business. I understand how hard it is to start a small business. That's why everything I'll do is designed to help small businesses grow and add jobs. I want to keep their taxes down on small business. I want regulators to see their job as encouraging small enterprise, not crushing it. And the thing I find most troubling about Obamacare, well, it's a long list, but one of the things I find most troubling is that when you go out and talk to small businesses and ask them what they think about it, they tell you it keeps them from hiring more people. My priority is jobs. I know how to make that happen. And President Bush had a very different path for a very different time. My path is designed in getting small businesses to grow and hire people.
Thanks, Governor. Mr. President.
Well,
first of all, I think it's important to tell you that we did come in during some tough times. We were losing 800,000 jobs a month when I started. But we had been digging our way out of policies that were misplaced and focused on the top doing very well and middle-class folks not doing well. Now, we've seen 31 consecutive months of job growth, 5.2 million new jobs created. And the plans that I talked about will create even more. But when Governor Romney says that he has a very different economic plan, the centerpiece of his economic plan are tax cuts. That's what took us from surplus to deficit. When he talks about getting tough on China, you got to keep in mind that Governor Romney invested in companies that were pioneers of outsourcing to China and is currently investing in countries, in companies that are building surveillance equipment for China to spy on its own folks. Governor, you're the last person who's going to get tough on China. And what we've done when it comes to trade is not only sign 3 trade deals to open up new markets, but we've also set up a task force for trade that goes after anybody who is taking advantage of American workers or businesses and not creating a level playing field. We've brought twice as many cases against unfair trade practices than the previous administration, and we've won every single one that's been decided. When I said that we had to make sure that China was not flooding our domestic market with cheap tires, Governor Romney said I was being protectionist, that it wouldn't be helpful to American workers. Well, in fact, we saved 1,000 jobs. And that's the kind of tough trade actions that are required. But the last point I want to make is this. You know, there are some things where Governor Romney is different from George Bush. Yes, George Bush didn't propose turning Medicare into a voucher. George Bush embraced comprehensive immigration reform. He didn't call for self-deportation. George Bush never suggested that we eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood. So there are differences between Governor Romney and George Bush, but they're not on economic policy. In some ways, he's gone to a more extreme place when it comes to social policy. And I think that's a mistake. That's not how we're going to move our economy forward.
I want to...
That was an excellent portrayal, because sometimes George Bush does get a bad rap. Let me bring my callers in here. Hey, what's going on, Dana? Let me bring you back in here, Toby. Hey, Dana. But like I was saying, Toby, you understand what I mean by Toby, how he just would fly off the reservation. I mean, there's a lot of things you can mention that George Bush did that was great without slandering him. Don't you agree?
I absolutely agree. And I thought President Obama's critique was devastating in that particular instance. Because, again, I don't believe you need to trash George Bush, and I don't believe President Obama has trashed George Bush, except to point out, you know, how bad the situation has gone. George Bush, you know, if you look at the logical extension of George Bush's foreign policy, you'll see that there's strong similarities to the way President Obama prosecutes his foreign policy. I think President Obama was rather fair with his critique of Romney versus Bush. So, again, I thought he was effective there. I think Governor Romney was so focused on attacking President Obama that he got off message. And again, I thought in that instance, he didn't function like a front runner. As a front runner, you know, you can afford to be presidential. Doesn't mean that you stop being aggressive, but you don't need to constantly attack to draw distinctions and advance an agenda. And I think Governor Romney lost that opportunity.
Well, I have a question for you, because I don't feel that President Obama attacked George Bush, President Bush. Former President Bush at all. In fact,
we wouldn't say he attacked George Bush. What I was saying earlier, I'm clear, I don't know if you caught the thing, was how Romney attacked George Bush, because I felt that in that exchange, by saying all the extreme policies that George Bush put in place,
The Republican Congress that's in place right now voted for those things. So to say those things is to alienate the people who's out there trying to stop and support you. It's about saying how he didn't handle a live ball question because he could have used took that time out to talk about George Bush policy in Africa with his AIDS relief and his malaria relief and all the policies they've done worldwide that has done some good. He could have easily used those examples then to equate George Bush with calamity and mishap is what I was saying, Dana.
Oh, definitely. I agree. I definitely agree. I felt that that Mitt Romney, I think he slandered or like you said, attacked former President Bush definitely in his comment and his response to the question. And he was so busy trying to show, I don't know, to me you don't have to win based on trying to highlight what somebody else is not doing. Being the president is about saying what you will do for this country and how you can make a, you know what I'm saying? It's about moving us to the next level and making this a better place. And I don't need to build merit on myself based on highlighting what you're not doing. What you're not doing is going to be shown. And by me trying to point out everything that you're not doing, I'm also losing the opportunity to say, hey, here's what I will do.
That right. I completely agree with you, Dana. This is Toby. I completely agree with you. I'd rather hear about what you're for than what you're against. So I thought that I think you're absolutely right, and I think Governor Romney missed an opportunity there. I believe the president took the advantage and exploited it well in that regard. Again, I thought while the president did well, I thought there were some significant points where Romney again set the agenda for everybody to talk about his quote plan, and I think he did an effective job at exploiting the places where our president has fallen short. And I think while the president can talk about some of the good things he's done, he also, I think the president missed an opportunity to better clarify some of the challenges he's had in honoring his own promises. He has failed in some very significant ways. As it relates to me as a black man, I believe he's failed miserably when it comes to dealing with some of our issues. Nonetheless, he still has some of my support.
Okay. Hold on, Dan. I want to blow you room. You see, Toby, that segued me right into my next topic because I mentioned earlier Obama has an Achilles heel, which is hard for anyone to exploit. No one knows how to use it to exploit it. Now, there's a gentleman that came up by the name of Mike. I'm trying to get his last name now. And
Mike Jones.
And he asked Barack a question. Black man. Now, this is Obama's Achilles heel. That everybody was Obama, and I looked the way Obama looked at him and watched how he handled it. Very difficult engaging an African. Asking, yo, Obama, what's up?
President, I voted for you in 2008. What have you done or accomplished to earn my vote in 2012? I'm not that optimistic as I was in 2012. Most things I need.
I want to call on Michael Jones.
Mr. President, I voted for you in 2008. What have you done or accomplished to earn my vote in 2012? I'm not that optimistic as I was in 2012. Most things I need for everyday living are very expensive.
Well, we've gone through a tough 4 years. There's no doubt about it. But 4 years ago, I told the American people and I told you I would cut taxes for middle-class families. And I did. I told you I'd cut taxes for small businesses. And I have. I said that I'd end the war in Iraq. And I did. I said we'd refocus attention on those who actually attacked us on 9/11. And we have gone after Al-Qaeda's leadership like never before, and Osama bin Laden is dead.
I said that we would put in place health care reform to make sure that insurance companies can't jerk you around, and if you don't have health insurance, that you'd have a chance to get affordable insurance. And I have. I committed that I would rein in the excesses of Wall Street, and we passed the toughest Wall Street reforms since the 1930s. We created 5 million jobs, gone from 800,000 jobs a month being lost, and we are making progress. We saved an auto industry that was on the brink of collapse. Now, does that mean you're not struggling? Absolutely not. A lot of us are. And that's why the plan that I put forward for manufacturing and education and reducing our deficit in a sensible way, using the savings from ending wars to rebuild America and putting people back to work, making sure that we are controlling our own energy, but not just the energy of today, but also the energy of the future, all those things will make a difference. So the point is, the commitments I've made, I've kept. And those that I haven't been able to keep, it's not for lack of trying, and we're going to get it done in a second term. But you should pay attention to this campaign, because Governor Romney has made some commitments as well. And I suspect he'll keep those too. You know, when members of the Republican Congress say, we're going to sign a no-tax pledge so that we don't ask a dime from millionaires and millions to reduce our deficit so we can still invest in education and helping kids go to college. He said, me too.
I'm going to stop it right there. I'm going to play some more. But he's not answering the question. Now, I'm going to paraphrase and go Negroid for y'all, for my white listeners. That's what us, that's called the send a slave jive talk. The black man said, yo, Obama, in 2008 I voted for you. Emphatically, I was up screaming, let's go, yes we can. Times are hard. Prices are high. I'm struggling. Why should I vote for you? Sure, he ran off a litany of success, health care, Osama bin Laden, energy plan, but you didn't tackle the key thing that the black man was saying. Hey, prices are high. Unemployment is high. What can you tell the people in the ghetto that why should we vote for you? You shouldn't blame the Republicans for saying anything. We talking about what policies have you put in place. And I'm going to let it run out, then I'll bring y'all in to comment on that. Hit it again for me.
When they said, we're going to cut Planned Parenthood funding, he said, me too. When he said, we're going to repeal Obamacare, first thing I'm going to do, despite the fact that it's the same health care plan that he passed in Massachusetts and is working well, he said, me too. That is not the kind of leadership that you need, but you should expect that those are promises he's going to keep.
Mr.
And the choice of this election is going to be whose promises are going to be more likely to help you in your life, make sure your kids can go to college, make sure that you are getting a good paying job, making sure that Medicare and Social Security will be there for
you. Thank
you.
Governor.
Now, what do you think about that, Toby?
Again, I struggle with that. He didn't tell the brother, this is why I deserve your vote. And these are the things that are on my plan that support you and will, again, address your concerns and your issues and the struggle that you're experiencing. So to me, he didn't tell the brother, he didn't really answer the brother's question, why should I vote for you? You know, and why? And, again, I think he focused on what was wrong with Governor Romney as opposed to what was right with him and his plan going forward. We already know what we've gotten over the past 4 years. What is your plan going forward, Brother Obama? And that's where I was struggling.
Right, I agree, because Planned Parenthood is not the reason why I'm struggling. What about you, Michigan, my man Matt Too from Michigan? What do you think?
Yeah, peace. Yeah, a couple of things that I noticed. I think one thing that we cannot blame Obama for is a comprehensive black agenda coming out of the black community demanding that he do certain things. I don't think we can blame that on him.
Correct.
The second thing is, you got to remember, man, I believe that Barack Obama has an identity crisis, and that's not wanting to recognize or be at one with his African self, which would be his father's side. So even though he's got the caramel skin, you know, you can't expect him to have an African consciousness when he does not, you know, he's not recognizing his father. I don't know if that has something to do with maybe his father leaving, resentment, but he's more attached to that European side of himself. So you got to keep that in mind. Now, as far as the brother making his comments, I think the way you described it is correct, but I think in Barack Obama's answer, because the blacks do not have a race-based political agenda, how else could he answer that but give him an American answer, which
correct.
Is health care and this being general, see? So he's saying, hey, you consider yourself an American, health care, education, these are things that all Americans can take part in. So, you know, I think we have to consider all of that before we jump down Barack Obama's throat.
Let me jump in real quick, Jimmy. I agree with you, brother. You know, I agree that, you know, we can't hold President Obama hostage to advancing the black agenda.
Not holding him hostage. I said there is no black agenda. So now that's two different things, though, brother.
No, I agree. Because my second point was that the failure to even advance a, quote, black agenda has been our collective failure because we haven't put one before him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he has to answer in a very, you know, quote, generalist way as it relates to things that he's done. My issue was, while he can talk about the things that he's done, what I was hoping to hear from him was a direct answer to the brother's question. Here's what I propose on doing, and this is why you should vote for me. I didn't hear him say, you know, we're going to put people to work by adjusting the local, you know, the TIF districting or empowerment zones in urban communities. I didn't hear him saying we're going to make sure that we double down on our efforts to improve access to education and especially make sure that we have full-day daycare in every state. I didn't hear him say this is what I'm going to do for you over the next 4 years. And that's what I was looking for.
So I felt like he took a global perspective, okay? I felt like he promoted those things that are in place that not only will allow for us as African Americans to prosper, it will also allow for all Americans to prosper, okay? If you bring the economy, if you bring the jobs back home, then guess what? Then more people can get jobs, and guess what? Then we all benefit. If he keeps these programs in place that we use to help us in society, then guess what? We all grow, we all prosper, we all succeed. So I felt like he did answer his question without saying, hey, listen here, brother, this is what I'm going to do for you in particular. What we are failing to realize is that when the economy does well, then we do well by default, okay? There is never going to be, or at least historically, there has not been an opportunity or a time where we succeeded and everyone else failed. We usually succeed because everyone else has successes, and then guess what? Okay, here, we can let you have a piece of the pie, too. So as long as they keep cooking pies, we'll be okay. And that's what he's doing. He's trying to promote success for Americans. And guess what? We as African Americans will be successful.
See,
that's where I struggle. Yeah, I disagree with that as well.
Let me respond. Let me play what Mitt Romney had to say and see how he tried, if he could respond to that.
Hold on, Dana.
I think you know better.
I think you know that these last 4 years haven't been so good as the president just described, and that you don't feel like you're confident that the next 4 years is going to be much better either. I can tell you that if you were to elect President Obama, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a repeat of the last 4 years. We just can't afford four more years like the last 4 years. He said that by now we'd have unemployment at 5.4%. The difference between where it is and 5.4% is 9 million Americans without work. I wasn't the one that said 5.4%. This was the president's plan. Didn't get there. He said he would have by now put forward a plan to reform Medicare and Social Security because he pointed out they're on the road to bankruptcy. He would reform them. He'd get that done. He hasn't even made a proposal on either one. He said in his first year he'd put out an immigration plan that would deal with our immigration challenges. Didn't even file it. This is a president who has not been able to do what he said he'd do. He said that he'd cut in half the deficit. He hasn't done that either. In fact, he doubled it. He said that by now, middle-income families would have a reduction in their health insurance premiums by $2,500 a year. It's gone up by $2,500 a year. And if Obamacare is passed or implemented, it's already been passed, if it's implemented fully, it'll be another $2,500 on top. The middle class is getting crushed under the policies of a president who has not understood what it takes to get the economy working again.
Now, I'll play half of that because, see, once again, I felt that he missed another opportunity to say what he would do if he was president for the African Americans. Now, he led into the question like I would if I was an opponent. Hey, man, I know you're struggling. We all are struggling. You know, the last 4 years have been hard. I would hope that he would have came back where I would have a policy for African Americans, for African Americans who are struggling under this president, right? And he could have had an opportunity as a front runner to show that he has some type of care, that he cares about the 47% or the African Americans that he's trying to be president of. John, does that make any sense to any one of y'all? Toby?
Yeah. I agree. I actually thought that his answer, at least at that point, was perfect. Now, what I would have preferred him to do at that point was specifically say, based on the plan that I have in place, these are the things that are going to make it different, and this is why you should vote for me to make your next 4 years different. Again, I think Romney missed an opportunity there. But yeah, what I struggle with is when we as a people, and I put it really on us because we haven't put forward an agenda either. So we fail in that regard. But
yeah,
when we as a people go ahead and buy into this concept that all boats will rise when everybody's boat rises, I don't believe in that right now because as relates to our people, our boat is anchored to bedrock. So when that water rises, our boat is going to sink. We've had chronic double digit unemployment in our communities. So while everybody's crying about this 8%, we have upwards to 18% and more unemployment. So while we've had these 5 million new jobs come in place, unfortunately our unemployment has remained static. It's not getting worse.
Yeah, here's my question to you. You know, one thing that Governor Romney pointed out was the fact that, you know, President Obama said that unemployment numbers would be down to 5.4, and they mm-hmm. are at 7.8, which is where they were when he was elected into office. But before he was elected into office, we were headed towards a country that is bankrupt. Okay,
correct.
And honestly, the unemployment right now is lower than it has been in 13 years? So how can you discount the fact that he took a negative and made it positive? And even if he did not make the numbers positive, he at least balanced them out. You know what I'm saying? And then to turn around and say, well, yeah, that's okay, but that's not the right answer.
Can I add something in there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things, like I said, man, the focus is squarely where it needs to be, and that is this. both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney play on the immaturity and the non-sophistication of the African-American community. And you're right. Mm-hmm. Romney has no agenda that can affect the black community because that was never put towards him. Neither does Barack Obama. And
correct.
The concept of, like the brother said, he's absolutely right. That just shows you how silly we are when we say, hey, let it trickle down. When jobs come in, we'll give us. It's almost, you know what it's almost like, man? It's almost like the house nigga. After they get done eating, whatever meat they don't eat off the chicken, we'll take that. And for us to still be with that mind state, man, in 2012, dude, we about done.
I agree.
I don't feel that I have a mindset of, okay, well, we'll just take what's left. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is that we can look at historical numbers, okay? And we know that when the world does not have, then we really don't have. That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying that if this country moves to where we are financially doing better, that gives us the opportunity to do better also. Am I saying that we're not deserving? Absolutely not. But what I'm saying is if you just look at companies and if you just look at company structure and if you just look at the educational facilities, we're the ones that are predominantly there. We are the ones that are getting the last of the last. And so if we're getting that last of the last, and if there's nothing, guess what we get? We get less than nothing. So that's why I can only hope that we can continue to move forward as a society.
Yeah. One other thing I meant to say, just wear it very quickly, bro. You know, if Republican was smart, you know what? You know how they could have got a lot of the black vote? You know what he could have said? He said, as soon as I get in, I know that there are some specific ills in the black community. One of them is mass incarceration. As soon as I get in, I'm going to have my Justice Department look directly into that and see exactly what we can do and give a direct answer to how do we kill this mass incarceration. As soon as I get in, I know the black banks are on decline. I'm going to see exactly what economic policies I can put in place to shore up black banks, to encourage more faith-based credit unions. As soon as I get in, I'm going to go right to the inner city. You see? He'd have messed them up.
Absolutely.
He'd have messed them up.
Like this. As soon as I get in, I'm going to look at reparations.
Even if he wouldn't, he'd have messed them up. Yeah.
I'm going to look at reparations in the form of when it says minority contracts,
yeah,
I'm going to say it's black contracts. When it says
yeah,
minority votes, I'm going to strictly remove everything off. You put it on black just so I can start repairing the damage. Then I'm going to look into reparations. It's just that
he'd
alone.
He killed them with that.
You're not even moving no money around. You're not even moving no money around.
Yeah.
Just classes you put it back in place or was put in place earlier, which is a Republican plan. That's all I'm saying, but I see he squarely missed the opportunity right there. But now,
yeah,
I want to do a little time I got. I want to play again how Romney missed it again. To me, spoke about it earlier how it's been like a boxing match. And this is him thinking that Obama didn't do their homework. And this is a foreign policy debate that everybody's talking about. This is Libya. And the funny thing about Libya is, and I read the transcripts, did he say it or did he not say it? Is. Well, let me go ahead and play the cut for y'all. Let y'all tell me what y'all think.
Again, turn it back in the environment. Kerry Wise,
this question actually comes from a brain trust of my friends at Global Telecom Supply in Mineola yesterday. We were sitting around talking about Libya, and we were reading and became aware of reports that the State Department refused extra security for our embassy in Benghazi, Libya, prior to the attacks that killed four Americans. Who was it that denied enhanced security, and why?
Well, let me first of all talk about our diplomats, because they serve all around the world and do an incredible job in a very dangerous situation. And these aren't just representatives of the United States. They're my representatives. I send them there, oftentimes in harm's way. I know these folks. and I know their families. So nobody is more concerned about their safety and security than I am. So as soon as we found out that the Benghazi consulate was being overrun, I was on the phone with my national security team, and I gave them three instructions. Number one, beef up our security and procedures, not just in Libya, but in every embassy and consulate in the region. Number two, investigate exactly what happened, regardless of where the facts lead us, to make sure that folks are held accountable and it doesn't happen again. And number three, we are going to find out who did this and we are going to hunt them down, because one of the things that I've said throughout my presidency is when folks mess with Americans, we go after them. Now, Governor Romney had a very different response. While we were still dealing with our diplomats being threatened, Governor Romney put out a press release trying to make political points. And that's not how a commander-in-chief operates. You don't turn national security into a political issue. Certainly not right when it's happening. And people, not everybody agrees with some of the decisions I've made. But when it comes to our national security, I mean what I say. I said I'd end the war in Libya, in Iraq, and I did. I said that we'd go after al-Qaeda and bin Laden. We have. I said we'd transition out of Afghanistan and start making sure that Afghans are responsible for their own security. That's what I'm doing. And when it comes to this issue, when I say that we are going to find out exactly what happened, everybody will be held accountable, and I am ultimately responsible for what's taking place there, because these are my folks, and I'm the one who has to greet those coffins when they come home. You know that I mean what I say.
Mr. President, I've got to move us along. Governor?
Thank you, Carrie, for your question. It's an important one. And I think the president just said correctly that the buck does stop at his desk, and he takes responsibility for that, for the failure in providing those security resources. And those terrible things may well happen from time to time. I feel very deeply sympathetic for the families of those who lost loved ones. And today there's a memorial service for one of those that was lost in this tragedy. We think of their families and care for them deeply. There were other issues associated with this tragedy. There were many days that passed before we knew whether this was a spontaneous demonstration or actually whether it was a terrorist attack. And there was no demonstration involved. It was a terrorist attack. And it took a long time for that to be told to the American people. Whether that was some misleading or instead whether we just didn't know what happened, I think you have to ask yourself, why didn't we know 5 days later when the ambassador to the United Nations went on TV to say that this was a demonstration? How could we have not known? But I find more troubling than this, that on the day following the assassination of a United States ambassador, the first time that's happened since 1979, when we have four Americans killed there, when apparently we didn't know what happened, that the president, the day after that happened, flies to Las Vegas for a political fundraiser, then the next day to Colorado for another event, another political event. I think these actions taken by a president and a leader have symbolic significance and perhaps even material significance, in that you'd hope that during that time we could call in the people who were actually eyewitnesses. We've read their accounts now about what happened. It was very clear this was not a demonstration. This was an attack by terrorists. And this calls into question the president's whole policy in the Middle East. Look what's happening in Syria, in Egypt, now in Libya. Consider the distance between ourselves and Israel. The president said that he was going to put daylight between us and Israel. We have Iran 4 years closer to a nuclear bomb. Syria is not just the tragedy of 30,000 civilians being killed by a military, but also a strategically significant player for America. The president's policies throughout the Middle East began with an apology tour and pursue a strategy of leading from behind, and this strategy is unraveling before our very eyes.
Because we're closing in, I want to still get a lot of people in. I want to ask you something, Mr. President, and then have the governor just quickly. Your Secretary of State, as I'm sure you know, has said that she takes full responsibility for the attack on a diplomatic mission in Benghazi. Does the buck stop with your Secretary of State as far as what went on here?
Secretary Clinton has done an extraordinary job, but she works for me. I'm the president. and I'm always responsible. And that's why nobody's more interested in finding out exactly what happened than I did. The day after the attack, Governor, I stood in the Rose Garden, and I told the American people and the world that we were going to find out exactly what happened, that this was an act of terror, and I also said that we're going to hunt down those who committed this crime. And then a few days later, I was there greeting the caskets coming into Andrews Air Force Base and grieving with the families. And the suggestion that anybody in my team, whether the Secretary of State, our UN ambassador, anybody on my team would play politics or mislead when we've lost four of our own, Governor, is offensive. That's not what we do. That's not what I do as president. That's not what I do as commander-in-chief.
Governor, if you want to reply
I think it's interesting. The president just said something which is that on the day after the attack, he went to the Rose Garden and said that this was an act of terror.
That's what I said.
You said in the Rose Garden, the day after the attack, it was an act of terror. It was not a spontaneous demonstration. Is that what you're saying?
Please proceed, Governor.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candace?
He did call it an act of terror. It did as well. It did as well take 2 weeks or so for the whole idea of there being a riot out there about this tape to come out. You're correct about that.
The administration indicated that this was a reaction to a video and was a spontaneous reaction. It took them a long time to say this was a terrorist act by a terrorist group. And to suggest, am I incorrect in that regard? On Sunday, your secretary, ambassador to the United Nations, one of the Sunday television shows and spoke about how this was a spontaneous reaction.
I'm happy to have a longer conversation about foreign
absolutely,
policy.
Absolutely, but I want to move you on. And
okay,
also, people
to
can go
too.
To the transcripts.
I just
want to
make sure that all these wonderful folks are going to have a chance to get their questions answered.
Because what I want to do, Mr. President, stand there for a second.
Now, like I said, Romney was a lot just really relying on his bully tactics and gotcha strategy instead of dealing with how he would have handled the foreign policy. Me, in my opinion, think the whole little Benghazi blow up and why they was trying to make a big deal of it was to paint Obama in the form of Jimmy Carter and have Romney perceived to be i.e. Ronald Reagan. But again, Romney comes off as Kerry, John Kerry. You know, it's difficult to attack a president, a sitting president. I'm bringing you in right now, Pianchi. It's difficult to attack a sitting president if you have no idea what the dossier or the foreign policy agenda is. So for you to come out and say what he's not saying or what he's not doing is very difficult for to say.
Obama is the biggest damn liar that I've seen in a long time. Use them damn old shuck and jive tactics, you know. And once again, I must say that the buck stops with me. Well, that's a damn lie. It was Samantha Powers, Hillary Clinton, and Susan Rice that coerced him along with France to get involved in Libya. And on this whole issue about Benghazi. So all these fools' lies. That man, I tell you, it's very comical, but yet at the same time, very disgusting. He's lying. And the lady, and on the issue about him calling him, stating that it was a terrorist attack. Well, here's the point. Whatever it was, Stevens was just nothing other than collateral damage. The same type of collateral damage that we label those innocent men, women, and children that get killed from Obama's authorized drone attacks, which numbers in the thousands. And Pakistan just had a large demonstration against that. He's a damn lie.
So how
you doing, man?
I'm all right, Pianchi. Tell me how you really feel. So what was your overall opinion of the debate.
Well, I didn't even listen to the debate. I mean, I've seen these things before. I've seen the debate with Jimmy, with Nixon and Kennedy.
Yeah, let me.
In black and white.
Going there, Dan,
from
Michigan, going there.
Yeah.
You want to say something?
Well, I hear Bianchi. I mean, in general, I think all the politicians are liars.
Hey, Meadow, how you doing, man?
Hey,
you see
good,
that
man.
Last station we was on? That guy got me so disgusted, I had to leave.
I think, in general, Bianchi, all of them are liars. But if you really listen to his answer, I think this issue right here is really just a political issue. I mean, it's very sad for people to die, but it's really just a political issue because any situation, and we know this from even the black community, hell, if you went with the first information when something happened in the black community, you had that shit backwards.
Yeah.
So any situation, it takes time for it to you know, pan all the way out. And he is a liar. But I didn't hear necessarily anything in that particular statement that he lied about. But this is political, man.
He lied when he says the buck stops here. That's not true.
Well,
Obama's
if you
not
own
running.
A corporation, Bianchi, the buck do stop. If one of your employees go out and slap somebody in the face, ultimately,
it ends with you
as the chief executive officer. So in that context, the buck do stop with him.
He's not the one to make the decision where the buck stops along the way, and that's the ultimate truth.
Yeah.
I mean, the man was persuaded, coerced into Libya.
He might have been. I don't know that he might have been. Yeah.
So the buck may stop with him, but he didn't create the buck. He didn't get the buck started. Somebody else started the buck. He should have left the damn thing alone. Well, I mean, that's what I would have done, but I'm not in that position. I think all the wars is a bunch of crap any damn way. But the problem is that American people are just dumb.
They is, man.
That's the problem. Americans are dumb.
What you got to say about that, Toby?
Say it again.
Anyone add to that, Toby? Anything you want to add on? I mean, add on or subtract?
Well, you know, I agree to the extent that I didn't hear necessarily a lie. I agree that the buck does stop with the president ultimately. I mean, yeah, there's managers underneath him, but we can't have it both ways. There are times when, you know, people under him make decisions, and they're good ones, and then we give him credit. And then there's people under him who make bonehead decisions, and we say, well, he can't take credit for that. No, he takes the good and the bad. So I don't mind him saying, okay, you know, ultimately it's my responsibility. The problem is, though, he didn't answer the dude's question. So, you know, how did that happen? You know, how did the somebody at the State Department decide not to give our diplomats the kind of security that they requested? How did that happen?
But I think he did when he said, that's where we're investigating. Now, I'm not saying they don't already know, but that is an answer to that question. He said, there's nobody else interested in getting to the bottom of this to me. And when we do get to the bottom, no matter who it affects, we're going to let the American people know. So that is an answer. Now, whether or not he can...
He made another lie.
I got to tell you, it's easy for us to sit back and say retrospectively what was the best answer at the time.
Right.
But we weren't the ones that were given it, okay? If you just look at what he has done, then you got to say this man is a man of his word. The one thing you don't do in a country that is protesting and that is rioting, the first thing you don't want to do as a representative of a country is come out with a statement of anger, with a statement, and
right,
especially if you don't have all the information. You don't want to incite more violence. You don't want to cause more violence and cause more grief. And so the right thing to do while you investigate is to make sure You see it on TV all the time, right? Well, yeah, what happened at so-and-so store today was a very heinous act, but we can assure you that we are looking into it and we are investigating what happened.
Right.
That's the right thing to do. You don't say, hey, look at what you did and make it worse.
No, I just, I would stipulate on that. You're right.
Yeah.
It's going to be funny when that body that they threw in the ocean, supposed Bin Laden, in the next couple of next week or so, is brought up and unwrapped, and it ain't Bin Laden.
Even if that happens, he has not been coming on TV giving all those messages like he was doing for 8 years or 10 years. Or
who
years.
Is it, Bianchi?
And Bin Laden's been dead. That was the 10th time the man's been killed.
Is it going to be a men hotel? It might be a men hotel.
It might be. And then all the SEAL Team 6 team get killed in a helicopter accident. And black and people believe that.
Hey, well, what can you believe? Bianchi, there's nothing else. I mean, okay, you got to... Okay, so... So what is the alternative?
Like he said, he know all his ambassador's family. That's a lie, too, because I know a battle here in St. Louis, and he don't know this man's family. So he's lying.
What about Governor Romney's comment about the binder full of women? If they would have gave him another 10 minutes on TV, he would have offended everybody. Except for the rich.
Well, yeah.
People, that was illegal. Come on now.
Quietly, Dana, I wanted a binder full of women. So I was sitting there like, hey, how did you get that?
I'm like, that's ridiculous. Come on, we took a binder
full of women. Where are giving out binders full of women at? Let me know.
That's right.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. I said, we just needed to extend about 10 more minutes, and he would have offended everybody. You get married before you have babies. I'm like, really? Okay, well, what about the single parents? What about those of us who are divorced with kids? You know what I'm saying? You don't get married with the hope that it's going to not work out. You get married with the hope that it's going to last forever. But if it doesn't, we keep it moving. So that's crazy. I'm telling you right now, you guys can say what you want to say, but you look at the alternative and you see what you get. You may not like the things the way they've been, but we are a lot better than we were.
Well,
you know,
I think
Obama. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think all I'm saying is, as African people, and I understand European politics, and you know the lesser of two evils, like the sister. I understand all of that, but I think we got to start being a little bit more sophisticated, and that is this: black folk ain't gonna get shit from neither one of them. And if we, so I understand European politics. Oh, don't vote. It's still a vote and all that stuff. But we're going to have to mature up, y'all.
Yeah, just like I said, I was telling another host, blacks' vote is practically irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. That's right. Sure is.
Blacks ain't got the numbers. Hell,
no.
And for a whole bunch of reasons, including starting from A to Z, abortions down to disenfranchisement from the prison population. So, I mean, that's the truth. I don't know any other better way to put it. Hell, there's all sorts of messages out there, and one lady done an article and said that the Democrats are dumping the blacks for the Hispanics.
That's anyway. Right. They don't even need them no more.
Well, this election, I mean, last election proved that the European vote cannot make you president, and nor could this voting. You got to get the what? You know, I'm with the black power vote right there, but you got to get the vote of color right now to win the White House now. That's just how it is now.
Well, the problem is you don't have all white folks come out and vote. That's what it is. You know, you got like 221 million whites in this country. Maybe not that many, 100 and some odd million. But they all, you only had, 55 million votes is what Obama had? That's way from being any mandate from the country's perspective.
If you want to see Europeans vote in mass, and they will come out almost 100%, You let black folk run around here talking about they finna put together some black power agenda. You gonna see them.
Oh, that Obama's stealing.
Yeah.
Here in St. Louis, white folks came out on crutches and walkers to kick the first black mayor out of office. He only had one term.
They'll show you how much they need the black vote then. You act like you want to be sophisticated and have some type of race-based consciousness. They'll outvote your ass 5-1.
What do you say to that, Toby?
Well, you know, I don't trip too much on what white folks do. One way or another, you know. The problem for us is that we don't have an agenda.
Right.
So that's one. Two, I don't mind Latinos or anybody else having, quote, their own agenda. You know, that's cool to me, you know, but I'm one of those cats who has a difficulty with affirmative action. Not because I didn't benefit from it, but because I think, you know, it hasn't been truly implemented, and the beneficiaries of affirmative action have been white women. And if we really are serious about things, I also don't like the logical extension of affirmative action, which gets into proportional hiring, because I'm a black business owner, and I like hiring 100% of my people being black. And I don't want proportional hiring because 75% of my community is white.
You got a point there.
we can't have it both ways. I hear our people, our quote leaders, saying, "Well, we want the businesses to look like the community." Hell, no, I don't. Because you can't do it on one side of the equation and not do it on the other.
That's a good one.
My thing is, if black folks are serious about changing the condition of our people, then we have to recognize that our agenda has to become paramount for us. And that whoever, whether it's Republican or Democrat, if they want to curry any of our votes, they need to respond to that agenda. And if they ignore the agenda, it doesn't stop us from implementing our agenda.
Right.
Yeah, Toby, I'm going to tell you something. Ain't nothing wrong with affirmative action or any other tool we can use. But see, the thing is, we don't use affirmative action the right way. And I've said many times that blacks, one thing that a nation has to do is manufacture. If you're not manufacturing, then what else is there left for you to do? That's begging. If we was manufacturing, then we could use affirmative action to get our manufactured goods specifically on those store shelves that's in our community and everybody else's store shelf that's being served from any federal program. We use affirmative action in that, not only to get jobs, but also to put our goods and services, our manufactured produce and manufactured goods on the shelf space of your Macy's, your Targets, your Walmarts, and so on and so on and so on, since they got your captive market.
Hey, let me add something in there. The brother's absolutely correct, because I'm a business owner as well. And it really does go back to family, this black agenda. Just to give you an example. So I'm on this pro-black Pan-Africanist blog talk the other night. And then so the brother comes, "Hey, man, we want you to come back on tonight." I said, "Well, what y'all talking about tonight, man?" "The Decoding the Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. I said, "What the hell?" I said, "Man, what the hell that got to do with a black agenda?" I said, "Man, don't call me with that mess no more, man." And I think I just said that to say this. With these blog talk stations and stuff, man, we jump around so much. First we want to talk about the black community. Then we want to talk about white secret societies. Man, it's frustrating, man.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'll be on trip on my blog talk radio, because I try to keep it real, but I do promote independent music on a certain day. So I like to showcase talent around the world. So I hope you'll be tripping on me on my little thing too.
Hillbilly music, I am.
I'm just saying, because you know my listenership increased by 700,000. You know, because you know people send me their music for all around the world so they can get a chance to get their stuff on, and I get a chance to at least educate them on what's going on topics. I kind of split my stuff in half, but
You know, you ain't going to probably hear no secret society or why I don't love my man on the station now. I'm going to let you know. We're going to deal with what's going on in the black community because I try to deal with solutions. And that's how we do it here on Underground, my man, my two.
One of the things I want to drop on here is, you know, the idea that I'm over here getting excited about a shit. One of the challenges is that affirmative action, this is why I almost wish a Republican would get in there and would be almost real with shit, because affirmative action is a marketplace issue. Okay, I'm going to do business with who I know.
Right.
And I don't know any supermarket who said, well, I'm not putting Latino food products in my supermarket, particularly when all them Latinos are around there trying to buy food. And they start going to their own markets. I know most people, mainstream supermarkets be like, oh, whoa, how do we get that business back in here? Well, you know, I'm thinking if you care about our dollar, you're going to care about our products. And you're going to do business with who you know based on, and you're going to make sure you know us because you want to do business with us. That's a real deal, free market deal. And unfortunately, I'll give you an example of what's happening here in Indiana. And almost anywhere you go now, I want to compete for a contract. And now I have to actually show that I'm a certified minority business. I mean, I have to go through extra paperwork to prove I'm a black man who owns this business. When my white counterpart, who offers the same kind of services, don't have to prove nothing. And guess who? Guess who's promoting this black certification, this minority certification? Black folks. And we created our own ceiling for doing business.
What, Toby?
And that's because part of that, and I mean, you just look at, let's look at the debates, right? Let's look at the debates. The one person who stood up and said, "What have you done for me?" was a black man. At what point do we recognize that we are American? And see, that's what happens when we try to promote the, hey, you didn't help me as a black person, and you're a black person, instead of why is it that we don't have rights, and why is it that we are arguing 100 years later after slavery, why are you treating us like slaves in some instances? That's the bigger problem. And so it's not about the what color is your skin, and hey, since your skin looks like my skin, why didn't you do what was right for me? It's about why is it in this country are we still fighting for equality when we helped build this place?
Well, that's because that's the way the country is. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. I don't blame white folks for not giving black people equality.
Well,
I wouldn't give you equality neither.
Nope.
You a damn fool.
No, I wouldn't either.
No, that's our
ignorance.
If you want equality, you got to take it.
That's right. Yeah. You're right about that, Bianca. And the thing about it, sis, is this. We are the only damn fools sitting at the round table of power, world power, with no damn identity. See a black person going to sit down there talking about, I'm representing America. White folk represent America. You don't represent no damn America. What you doing sitting there? Get out of here and go get us some coffee. You don't even know who you is.
Well, my thing is, too, check this out. If I do represent America, I'm representing my slice of America. So I don't have a problem like Paul Robeson. I don't have a problem. My people built this place. So I have an inheritance here, too.
Yeah, but you know, we say black folks built this place, but where's the evidence? You go into the rotunda there in the white folks, and you got friezes of every inch of this country being built from the Donna Discovery until Donna Flight, and you don't see no black folks on none of that stuff.
But
so,
hey, Bianca, but here's the key to that. If I come get all four of y'all right now and say, I'm going to kick y'all ass, get out here and help me put this roof on my house. Now, if I scare y'all bad enough, y'all get out here and help me, I ain't signed no contract with y'all. That don't mean
right.
You got access to this house because I kicked your ass and made you put this roof on.
Yeah, that's right.
See, we think we got a partnership with them. Where's the partnership agreement? Somebody show it to me where they said, even though you helped build this, that this part
you know
yours. Where's the partnership agreement?
The partnership in America has always been built economically, right? And so what happens is you saw we got bang for our buck when we boycotted. That's what happened. Well, we stood up and said, you know what, we're no longer going to be treated like second-class citizens, and so if you want to put me on the back of the bus, I won't ride the bus at all. That's when you saw change. So
you know what we did? You know what we did with what we did then is when they said, okay, y'all can ride the bus.
Especially if you got some money.
But we come,
yeah.
See, here's the thing. We gave up our economic interests.
That's right.
Because during that bus boycott, we created jitney services, our own transportation networks, our own restaurants. We created our own situation. You didn't want our dollar, we'll create. The
blacks
they
already
said,
had a bus line. They
right.
had a bus line in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, called the Safe Bus Company that didn't go out of business finally until like 1974.
It was
so highly competitive that the Duke Bus Company, I think they was probably related to Duke Power and Light, could not even compete with them.
You know what white people did, man.
We gave it up.
You know what they did,
yep.
man. Here we come knocking on the door, man. We wanna sit at y'all's restaurants and the counters. What they did is they went back and said, wait a minute, do these niggas got some money? You come back to the door. Y'all got some money? Yeah, we got money. Well, hell, come on in.
No,
so damn
they
stupid.
Sent us around the side, man.
Yeah,
they gave the stuff out the window.
We are people without an identity. I don't know why we can't see that. Running
yeah,
around trying to get in white
Diva.
Society every way we can.
Yeah, to the lady, you don't want to give up your identity in this country. You want to maintain that identity.
That's right.
If you give up that identity,
I don't think that you can build
over.
A better America. I don't believe that we can build a better place. I don't believe that we end up better as citizens of this United States. If we
Here
can't
we go.
Recognize at some point, we got to learn to live together.
Here we go. That's
the
civil rights.
And if that means that I educate, that I take my children and put them in educational institutions that are going to allow them to appreciate being a different culture, then that's okay.
Uh-oh,
but it doesn't mean that I need to figure out some way to separate myself from this society and thinking that it's going to strengthen me as a people.
Well, nobody said
that.
You already separated.
Wait, did Dana just suggest, though, that it should be the right of black parents to be able to send their children to any school that they think is right and appropriate?
Absolutely. I think that is a right.
Well, let me ask you, well, why would black folks do that when ducks don't do it? Squirrels
yeah,
don't.
No. Well,
huh?
Wait a minute. Here's what I'm talking about. Is it's kind of like Dana. I hear a whole bunch of our people. I hear a whole bunch of our people talking about why we can't go for school choice, why we can't promote vouchers so that our parents can take us and send their kids to where they want to send their kids. And why is that? Because I hear our people.
Well, I see what you're saying.
So
I see what you're saying now. But you know, when you said at the beginning, it didn't sound like you were saying. If blacks had vouchers, then they would be able to support and maintain independent black institutions who already
Hallelujah.
Have a
But
record.
That ain't what they're going to do, Bianchi. They're going to run out there to the suburbs and try to put their kids into white school. Listen, Claude Anderson said this. I was in one of his lectures. He said, we so silly. You got people who for trees, they for tree rights. People who for gays, they for gay rights. People who for whales, they for whale rights. When you get to a nigga, he for civil rights. He said, now which one of y'all got a relative named Silver? What the hell is Silver?
On that note, man, too, let me go in there and get my little last little PSA. I know I don't run no commercials in everybody, so let me go in there and give a shout out to my man Montu from Michigan, Toby from Indianapolis, Danny from DC, and of course the ever loving Bianchi. This is Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. We was reliving the debate from tonight, and I want to just play this little theme of how time was right back in the day when we was free black people. And good night, may your God be with you. But check me out on this point right here, Dana and Bianchi.
to marry your mama, huh? You still want it, right? Well, how am I going to do that? I mean, it's a big load.
Charles and Charlene are moving now. There'll only be four of us.
Together here to join these two in holy matrimony.
I don't know.
Would you repeat after me, please? I, Rupert, take thee, Claudine.
I, Rupert, take thee, Claudine.
Word not broken! Word not broken! Word not broken! Word not broken! Word not broken!
Word!
To live together after God's ordinance in the holy state of matrimony.
I will.
Come on, stop, hold it.
Who giveth this woman to be married to this man?
You will.
You will.
I will.
I will.
Remember, everybody, work, not welfare. Work, not welfare. I decided to end it with a little shout from Claudine for a minute because that was like the last bastion of African-Americanism to me, where blacks was arguing work, not welfare. We still had traditional families sticking together, and we just had Mr. Welfare Man, get out of my life. One day, black Americans will go back to that time. In the 60 seconds I got, y'all, I'd like, you know, thank y'all for being on my show. Any shouts that you would like to give out, Toby, to anybody?
Well, I'm going to say
good,
this.
Bro. I just appreciate the time.
Yeah, I'm going to say this. I'm not criticizing anybody for supporting and having the feelings they have toward Obama. I can understand it. But the thing that gets me is that we just constantly continue to vote blindly for these people. You have to stop that. Your vote is, I mean, it's like a prostitute giving up her body and not getting paid.
What about you? All right now, Dana. What about you now?
Well, I agree. It's always better to do research and always make informed decisions and informed choices. But the one thing that I can hope is that regardless of who we vote for, that we can all try to figure out a way to realize that we're all Americans, and that once we can promote this, all of us growing together, then guess what? That's the only way it'll become a better place.